Infectious Greed. This book is not for those who want their spirits lifted with optimistic platitudes. However, it is the best book I have read on the history of the derivatives markets since it began its explosive growth in the early 80s. The fact that this highly risky business does not have a long history is very important when we look at the world today. What is unbelievable is the amount of risk that investors have faced for almost a quarter of a century and yet still have no clue they even face it. According to the efficient markets hypothesis, and why trillions of dollars are indexed, is because you can't know more than anyone else in the money game, since it assumes that all investors have all relative information. The Orange County bankruptcy, Keating 5, Michael Milken, Long Term Capital, Enron, WorldCom, okay, you get the picture. Clearly, all of these are just a few historical reasons that the playing field for information is not level. The power behind derivatives since the 1980s boggles the mind. In the remaining time on this sound file, I would like to give you two examples of the huge risk investors, whether big or small, smart or dumb, didn't realize at the time. Example number one. Bankers Trust, January 1988. Even though things had looked rough for the bank, considering that 1987 had not been a great year in the industry, Bankers was pleased to report that they had managed to show in their unaudited earnings to have a tiny $1.2 million profit. Yay! This was a good investment. It was profitable. Wait. Now let's start digging. The bank's losses were offset by $593 million in income from currency trading, of which $338 million was made in the fourth quarter alone of 1987. But as I remember from being in the business at the time, we were trying to explain to clients why so many people had lost money in the fourth quarter of 1987. Andy Krieger, one currency trader, was the whole reason that Bankers Trust reported a profit. What Charles Sanford, the bank's CEO, would later attest is that he did not know of the huge bets Krieger was making. How big were the bets? In 1987, at one point, Krieger sold or shorted roughly the entire money supply of New Zealand. According to public records, the bets were so large that the New England Central Bank, through private investigators, had tracked him down, and New England's finance minister had actually even telephoned Sanford to complain. But how could he get by unnoticed? This piece of information is mind-boggling, since it still exists today. The trades were made in the unregulated over-the-counter derivatives market. This market consists of private trades, which, as I just stated, is an unregulated market. If you trace the 80s, 90s, and even years since the, quote, bust of technology, unquote, in 2000, you will find that according to the Office of Comptroller's Currency, this market for years has consisted of over 90% of all derivatives trades. Another example that pointed out huge risk that it existed underneath what would appear to be a, quote, conservative, quote, part of the markets were the holdings of a municipality in 1994. Remember Orange County? When it went under, it would go down as the largest municipal bankruptcy in history. They had purchased structured notes, which at the time was a new financial product of the 80s, and on paper it appeared very safe. But the structured notes contained formulas that essentially were a big bet on interest rates remaining low. If the rates went lower, the gains grew. As interest rates rose, the spread narrowed until losses began. Some of the more exotic ones, in fact almost 20% of Orange County's funds, were tied to the Swiss interest rates. Everything was going fine until Big Al had to raise rates. You see, by the spring of 1989, the central bank had raised rates to over 9.75%, But then, due to the recession of 1990, they had to cut rates. By January of 1994, interest rates were still at the historical low rate of 3%. So on February 4th, the move up was by 0.25% to 3.25%. However, within 4 months, it was up to 4%. Now, ironically, the Feds have moved rates up this year from 1 to 1.75 in less than 4 months. I wonder if this will produce the damage seen in 1994, which was just 10 years ago. While Wall Street certainly created these tools, it should also be noted that two major brokerage firms actually warned Citron, who was the county's treasurer and portfolio manager, several times about the risky interest rate bets that he was making. Even the ratings on their bonds were receiving the highest rating possible right up until December 1994, when they filed bankruptcy. Now, in case your memory was that Orange County was an isolated incidence, or one bad apple, you need to see the top 100 list of those institutions who lost money in 1994. In case you think that this was a stock market meltdown, think again. For 1994, saw the S&P fall less than 1.5%. The Asian meltdown in 1997, the Russian bond market collapse along with the largest hedge fund, Long-Term Capital, to go under in 1998. Enron, the largest bankruptcy in history, still pointed out the enormous risk that were going on below the surface or beyond the knowledge of most investors. In fact, a 233-year-old bank in England, whose one currency trader in Singapore would cause it to file bankruptcy, or the Central Bank of Thailand, or Mexico's peso devaluation, or the scandals of Sumitomo Corporation and Daiwa Bank, would also prove that these problems were not just U.S. problems, but these were worldwide. Once again, this is not a book for light bedtime reading. However, Mr. Partnoy does give investors an understanding of why such foolish rhetoric as, quote, investors have the same information, unquote, is just pure insanity, and it goes against common sense. Myron Scholes, who was a partner in Long-Term Capital and who had won a Nobel Prize for his works with options theory, may be one that you remember from my DVD. Scholes was the same Black Scholes that wrote, quote, no one could consistently outperform the markets over time. The book points out that while Scholes was building the business for Long-Term Capital, that when he came across a derivatives trader that told him he could not consistently outperform the markets, he snapped back, as long as there continue to be people like you, we'll make money. So why is this book important for investors today? Because derivatives are the largest securities market in the world. In fact, in September of 2004 report by the International Monetary Fund, through the end of 2003, the worldwide equity markets were valued at $31 trillion. But the derivatives markets were estimated to be at $197 trillion. The more you understand about the foundations that build the money game and the risk inherent throughout that system, the better equipped you will be to understand risk as an investor.